like, am I hard enough? Because you're like, Chris is not hard. But I'm like, well, fuck, am I doing it? And there's one scene in Curb. It was funny. And one scene in Curb where I come to get the jacket back. Mm-hmm. I go, give me the motherfucking jacket back. And he goes to get the jacket. And I look at her and she's going, she's drunk. And she goes, you didn't love her because you cheated on her. You didn't love that. And I turn around, I go, shut the fuck up, bitch. Which is what as a gangster rapper, they're like, okay, cut. Chris, not as harsh, you know. Let's kind of. I was like, I'm being too hard now, you know. I'm like, let me just, you know, take it down on a little notch.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Maze. You can check them out at collectorsmaze.com for all things related to Phantom. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
It's going great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. So who do we have on tonight?
Oh, man, we actually have a really cool guest tonight. We're actually joined by actor and comedian Chris Williams. Chris has acted in many shows and movies such as Dodgeball, Silicon Valley, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Californication. The list goes on and on. He's been a voice actor on several video games, including characters from the Crash Bandicoot franchise, which was very odd. I didn't know that. That was actually really cool. But Chris, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast tonight. How you doing, buddy?
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to see you.
Thanks a lot for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I just shaved my beard, too, by the way. I'm sorry. And I was in trying to be, and I had an audition for a role, and I'd be cleaner shaven. So I had a nice beard for you, you know, part of the beard gang. Man. So.
You look good with and without a beard. We both do not look good without beards. At least I don't. I look like a tired elementary schooler.
Yeah. All right. So what were you auditioning for?
It's a new show. Well, a new, it's on HBO Max. It's called First Lady, which is cool. About all the first ladies that have made a big impact. Michelle Obama's played by Viola Davis.
Oh,
Michelle
cool.
Pfeiffer's Betty Ford, Aaron Eckhart's Ford, Kiefer Sutherland's FDR, and Gillian Anderson is Eleanor Roosevelt. So I read for a real life character, a guy named Walter F. White. It's a really cool thing. He was the head of the NAACP for 30 years, in 1930, in the 30s and 40s. And he's blonde hair and blue eye, but he was a black man. He was a quarter black. But what he would do is he would go around the South and stuff like that and infiltrate lynchings and getting all the information about all these lynchings and pose as a white man, even though he looked white. He was a black guy, and get all the information from these guys who are willing to just, you know, say, oh, no, okay, just shoot a black guy. You know, the cops are behind you. Just go ahead. Just shoot him if you want. Pretty well. So he actually set up something with Marian Anderson was the biggest opera singer. She's a black opera singer in the 30s. And the Daughters of the American Revolution did not want her to perform at the Washington Constitution Hall, because they said only white performers, and the NAACP went to Eleanor and was like, let's just do our own concert at the Lincoln Memorial. And there's 70,000 people came.
Oh, wow.
Like to stick it to the DAR. So this is my scene is the meeting with Eleanor Roosevelt and playing this guy. So they want a black man with blue eyes, I guess, to play a white looking guy. And yeah, so that was a long explanation for a short thing.
No, it's
no, that was a cool ride. Yeah. I never heard that story before. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
So, backstory wise, I mean, you started as in comedy. Were you a comedian doing stand up before you got to acting?
I did do stand up. I went to Georgetown University and graduated with a psychology degree, and then came out to LA. My sister was out here at the time, and I was going to be a lawyer, going to the record industry, you know, doing A&R and music scouting. And then I knew I was going to get to acting, but I didn't want to be poor because it's all my friends are going to business school and law school, and you kind of have to give everything up to, you know, be available to do stuff. So 25, I did a play, and they're like, well, what are you waiting for? So I started auditioning and stuff, and I decided that this was going to be my grad school. As long as I saw forward progress in my career, like I was getting jobs, I would keep funding it with 10 credit cards. And at one point, so from 25 to about 30, 31, I was $60,000 in credit card debt. By $5,000 to $6,000 a year, I was burning just to, you know, finance charges and stuff. But I was you know, taken here, taken here, here, here. And as long as I said, you know, Blank Man was my first movie, and then it made your paint. So as long as I saw steps, and then I got a TV show called Hype, which is on the WB network, the now defunct. And it was a sketch with Frank Caliendo. Do you know Frank Caliendo?
Who does absolutely.
The voices, yeah. Definitely. Frank was on it. And Jennifer Lee Cox, who played Jan Brady in the Brady Bunch movie. So all these sketch comedy people, and knocked out my debt just like that. With we did 17 episodes. So I was a gamble, basically. I was gambling on myself. And because if I was going to go to law school, I'm going to have to pay
money
back anyway. So I might as well.
you got a deal, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't recommend it.
Yeah, we actually watched the pilot today for Hype and all. It was actually really good and all.
Yeah.
Really? Would you watch the pilot for Hype?
It's on YouTube. Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
It had like the 90s commercials and shit in it still. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I haven't seen it. I gotta
I'll send you a link and all. Yeah.
That's definitely a blast from the past. Yeah. It's
crazy.
Cool.
It was right on the heels of, you know, Mad TV was going and SNL, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. It was fun. And the guy Chicken, did you see Chicken?
I'm not sure.
He's the white guy?
No.
He was a white guy. He was
playing like, did he play Bill Clinton?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I remember that.
He was like the star of it because he was this comedian who would just do crazy. Like he would act like a chicken in the audience and swearing. He's just a nutty guy. So he was like the guy that everyone was hyped about or whatever. So he was the main star of it. And he did a reality show too with his uncle. And then he died like 5-6 years later.
Oh man.
Suicide. Yeah, it was rough.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a really young career.
Yeah. Yeah, but Hype got me out of my debt. And then I was at ground one again, like, you know, and then I could start hopefully making more and more and more, getting more and more jobs.
So what did you do after Hype?
So I was doing stand up before I did Hype, because I used to do all these characters. I decided that when I did stand up, that helped me do the characters for Hype. And when I got Hype, I got to do all these different things with prosthetics, with like I have brown contacts and strange teeth and all this stuff. And Marla Garland, who was the casting director on Hype, is Jeff Garland's wife.
Oh, wow.
Okay. On Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So knew that I could do this rapper character for Crazy Eyes Killa in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
One of my favorites.
And got me in the audition. And I had brown contacts. And for the audition, I wore brown contacts because I have blue eyes. And if I'm going to be a hard, you know, gangster rapper, I got to have brown, you know, I got to have like brown eyes. So I wore these contacts and I had these fangs, called myself the Wolf Man, because I had like a wolf tattoo, like WOLFF with my name. You know how they take a name and call myself, oh, like the Wolf Man. And I went into the audition. And remember, the audition as well as the show is improv. Mm-hmm. So all I got, if you know the episode, the only thing I got on a slip of paper was you're at your engagement party to Wanda, have a conversation, and you like eating pussy and you can't live without it. Asian pussy.
Asian pussy.
You can't live without it. And that was it. So I went in as I left my house in this, because if I went in like this, Chris from Georgetown, whatever, they're not going to like, and supposedly Master P, Sticky Fingers, Ghostface Killa, and Mike Epps, they all read for it.
Oh, okay.
But I went in as this wolf, the wolf guy, and my banter, the audition's with Larry. So I was like, motherfucker, you got two first names, Larry and Dave. How'd you get that motherfucker? He's like, my dad. It's like, I like that shit. So I would try to endear myself to him as much as possible in the audition. So when I left, they thought I was a rapper. And thank goodness, because they're like, you know, if I went in like this, there's no way I could have even gotten it. So I did that, and then because Curb did so well, I got a reading for the script of Dodgeball with Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn. So I got to do the first table reading for Dodgeball with, you know, Justin Long was there, Vince, Ben, and they hadn't filled in the other roles, so I got to do the black guy.
Was that the character name on the script? Was Black Guy or
Dwight? Exactly. So, but I played Dwight. I played him like this. I played him like a nerdy black guy. And they're like, can you make him a little more urban? Can you make it? I was like, okay. So I, you know, put a little voice on him, whatever. Yeah. So then, and then I was auditioning. So in Dodgeball, I was auditioning the other people playing Owen, the nerdy character who falls in love with Missy Pyle.
Yeah.
So I was interviewing as Dwight. I was interviewing, auditioning with all the guys playing that role. And I'm like, well, do I have the role? Do I have the role or not? It's like, but they had me come in and I kept in. And then at one point he was like, oh, you got it. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Cause I spent all this time helping you guys out. I better get this role. So that was that's how I got into Dodgeball, which was cool.
That's cool. That was a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And the casting directors for Dodgeball also were the casting directors for Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow. Oh, nice. So just kind of all lined up. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah. that's how it usually goes.
Yeah. One job goes to the next.
So yeah. So Dodgeball was a really cool experience to be part of that.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
For Crazy Eyes Killer, did you write any of that scene beforehand with the rap and everything? Or did you just...
The rap I had written. Okay. But as I said, he didn't know, because it's all improv. He didn't know that I had it written. So I said, well, I got something for you. Like, yeah, and I'm a rapper, So I was like this. And also the reason why it was Crazy Eyes is because, remember, I was wearing those contacts.
Yeah.
And I don't wear contacts. But I'm like, so they're like, so what's the name of your character? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I said, I don't want to wear contacts. So I'll take one out. And then I'll call myself like Crazy Eyes. And then put a killer and then spell it all with K's. So that's how Crazy Eyes Killer, and they named the episode after me. So that's how Crazy Eyes came about, because I didn't want to wear a contact. So when we did the rap part, I just pulled it out and I started reading it. And then he was cracking up so much. Supposedly when we were doing, if you can make Larry laugh while we're doing the scene, you're doing a good job. So we had to cut so many times because he was laughing because he wasn't expecting. And also, for me, I had to be, if I'm a gangster rapper, I had to be hard. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to be as hard as I can be. So I'm like, motherfucker, this, that, and the other, I'm trying to be as intimidating as I. So, and I kept, there's no audience. So there's no real gauge of how I'm doing or how hard I'm being or whatever. And I kept saying, is this good? And they're like, keep going. I was like, all right, well, if you're buying it, I'm going to sell it. A lot, and like I use things like Kun de la. People don't realize, they think it's cool de la. It's actually C-U-N-D-E-L-A apostrophe over the A, which is a word my boys and I made up in Martha's Vineyard on the beach to see if people would start saying it. Of course, no one was gonna say it, but that was like an homage to my boys. So I thought we were Kun de la. Like, we are Kun de la. Like, it's a made up word, but he's like, we are whatever that is. We are Kun de la. It's like, we're not Kun de la. So it's a lot. The autonomy that it let me have on that show to do and say things, being in the character. On my Instagram, there's actually 4 or 5 deleted scenes.
Okay.
That were never seen. Yeah. So if you check out my Instagram.
Check that out. Yeah.
You can see some of my Crazy Eyes scenes that never made it. And I try to also make Crazy Eyes smarter than you would make a rapper usually. Cause like Master P was a hustler he was up $50 million a year, doing his out of his back of his car. And now he's, successful. And like all these rappers are smart guy, like Jay-Z has an incredible art collection and all that kind of stuff. So I try to incorporate that. Like, he's not an idiot. He may seem like an idiot or seem dumb, or these rappers don't know shit, but I was trying to make him, like I said, I'm gonna make an oil painting of myself. I have a bad motherfucker on the bottom, because Silk the Shocker, I was doing my research. Silk the Shocker had a large oil painting of himself in his room. And I was like, who in a sweatsuit? And I'm like, so I'm gonna have a bad motherfucker on the bottom. And I said, but I want a Monet or a Manet, because I'm a French impressionist motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? to give them some sort of, depth to, like, how does Crazy Eyes know about French impressionism? So it was a lot of fun to do that.
That's cool. You mentioned that you were kind of doing stand up to kind of hone in on some characters that you were doing in the show. So it was stand up always kind of like an avenue for you to get to acting?
Yeah, it was an avenue. I thought I was good at it, and I was good, but what I used to do was I used to do a lot of characters. So I had like a basketball player, that was ridiculous. And then I did, which was on hype, that I, I did a deaf homosexual. Of course, I could never do that now.
Yeah.
Because that is totally, you know, forbidden, but it actually made it to TV. I did it on hype. So I used to do that in my stand about
WB. Wow.
Yeah. Because my, my neighbor was deaf and I just thought there'd be a nice, interesting mix of the two, and it worked. It was funny at the time, not funny anymore, but that, and I used to do like, I did a medieval black character before the Black Knight. You know, I did like, you know, why they call it the Dark Ages. And I did a whole thing about, you know, riding on my steed through the hills of Beverly when the sheriff of the hills came in and said, knock me off my steed and try to, you know, so basically that kind of stuff. So I was doing characters. And then I started doing a little more stand up in terms of just, you know, crowd work and that kind of stuff. But it got me performing and it got me to do these characters, which led me to do hype. And then I went on tour with my sister as her opening act in 97. I did it every now and then. Every now and then I'll do some stand up. I have a character now that I'm doing called Incog Negro, the prison magician. So he's a magician out of prison who I'm a magician as well. I figured I incorporate, like, you know, I like to take two crazy things and put them together that you would normally. So I come on in an orange jumpsuit and I'm like, you know, what perchance would a magician pull out of a hat? It's this is chapeau. That's Italian for hat, you ignorant motherfuckers. I said, what would perchance a hare or a rabbit or a hare? And I pull out a wig. How about a whole bunch of hair, motherfuckers? Like that. So he's there to intimidate you as a magician. So I do that. I do that for stand up now, and I did like doing it, but I didn't really like the stand up life of, you know, waiting to go up at, you know, you're waiting to go up on your turn at midnight and, you know, watching other comedians and that people cutting up each other. And I was had a show, a stand-up comedy show in Los Angeles that Dane Cook was on. I think Retta was on it. So a whole bunch of people, Zach Galifianakis was on the show. And of course they all went to comedian like this and I went the other way. So yeah, it was fun stuff.
Are you still getting up on stage now?
I haven't gotten up on stage in a while. I kind of want to. I just got to figure out what I want to talk about, what I want to say. And also not doing it where it's, I have to start over. Like, I'd like to have a spot. Like, you know, you're going to go up at 9 o'clock and I go up at 9 o'clock. So we'll see. I might get back into do some stand-up soon. That's because it's fun. It's fun stuff.
I'm sure you just miss it.
Yeah, it's nice being performing, you know, your own things. And yeah, and what I used to close my act with was Jefferson Pip, who was the world's greatest backup singer. So you've heard all the hits, and now you hear nothing. It's KTEL Records presents Jefferson Pip, the world's greatest backup singer. You hear all this now, and like, do, 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 you're all right. Like, I would do Madonna, like, do, 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 do. Anyway, Madonna, and then I do this creep thing at the end. It was funny. It was my closer. So it went, seemed to go over well. It was funny. Funny at the time.
So you did mention you did a comedy show at your sister. I mean, I know your sister was relatively famous. Were you kind of like, felt like you had to get into like performing because of your sister, or you just want to do it on your own?
My sister's Vanessa Williams and actress, singer, and my parents are both music teachers.
Okay.
Elementary school music. So we've had music all our life and performing, and I did my first play when I was in nursery school, and I played a mop to a raggedy. I got married to a Raggedy Ann doll, and I was like, "Oh, I can get women like acting like this." I was like, "Oh, I can," you know. So I got the bug early on, like liking to perform. And then through high school, I did shows, and then I went to Georgetown, and I did a couple things, but I was a cheerleader at Georgetown because I wanted the best seats in the house for the basketball games. So what better way at the basketball game for free and the best seats in the house. And I get to put my hand on a woman's ass legally.
Yeah.
She'll let me put like, and hold her up. Like, you can't beat that. And I get to travel. I get to go to some great games. So, and I'm going to yell and scream as it is anyway. So I might as well yell and scream. So I've always been a performer to a certain extent. And Vanessa had, you know, she was Miss America, and then performance and music, and it's always been in our family. So when she came out and was doing her thing, I mean, I had a different path than she did, because she became famous and then had to have people understand her talent to come up to her fame, where I had to, like, you know, slowly, you know, work, job, you know, more and more notoriety and that kind of stuff. So she had some influence on it, but, you know, mostly it's what I wanted to do. Okay. I was going to be a lawyer, but I'm not a lawyer. So.
And it's funny because you said your parents were both musicians. So were they pressuring you to be a lawyer at first, or did you just want to be a lawyer?
No, they wanted me to be a lawyer. Exactly.
There's no money in this.
No, exactly. And they're at their respective schools for 40 years, you know, living the American dream of having, you know, in a job for a long time, something stable and something steady. And you can't, you know, having a degree and a law degree and become a lawyer. I mean, that's pretty much everyone needs a lawyer at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Some
point. Yeah, for sure.
That wasn't my bag. I was not feeling being a lawyer. Bigger fish to fry.
You grew up with like music in your house, like playing a lot of the time, right? What instruments did you learn growing up?
I started playing the oboe.
Okay.
In third grade. And we were required as a family to take instruments all the way through high school. So my parents said I chose the oboe, which is not right. But also being music teachers, they're like, let's give him the hardest instrument that, you know, because a double reed oboe is one of the hardest instruments to do, as opposed to like clarinet, single reed, or this and the other. And then I can always transfer over into something else. And I ended up playing the saxophone.
Oh.
And then my sister played the French horn and piano. So my dad and my mother both gave lessons in the house. So there was constant music at my house and people over and being very social and, you know, teaching music. And my dad was the president of the Westchester County. I'm from New York originally. Westchester County School Music Association president. And so, yeah, we always had music going on and a wide breadth of music as well. Like my parents were both in a Baroque choir we would go to every Sunday night. And, you know, from the Beatles to Bill Withers to soul to Stevie Wonder to a lot of classical music played in our house. Peter and the Wolf. Yeah, so there's always constantly music in our house. So that really feeds into acting too, to a certain extent, because even timing, when you're saying voiceovers and stuff, I did a lot of dubbing for people in, you know, ADR, it's called additional dialogue recording in movies and stuff. So yeah, it's all about timing. It's all about timing when you're trying to mimic someone's voice or redoing a line that you have to get right on. So
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, music's been a big part of our lives.
Do you still actually play? Do you still play sax?
Yeah. Well, I had my saxophone when I graduated high school. My parents took me to Japan for my graduation gift.
Okay.
And bought me a saxophone, a Yamaha saxophone in Japan. Nice. And we brought it back.
Okay.
And I still have my tenor and I played it. I don't play as much as I should, but on my Instagram, I played it a while back and I still need to practice a little. My oboe is just really, really horrible. So yeah, I've just given up on that. And it's not really good to have a jazz oboist around. I don't know how many jazz oboists you've ever heard of, but so yeah, so I need to practice my little sax.
So you did mention voice acting. How did you actually get into the voice acting portion of your career?
It's really the same thing as, you know, you have an agent and I have a voiceover agent and a theatrical agent.
Okay.
I've done, you know, commercials and video games and I was Crunch Bandicoot, you know, which is Crash's brother. And hey, talking about Mr. T. Like he's like, oh, Teddy the Fool. So I got to do that. And he just a basic audition for it, just like anything else. And some cartoons I've done. And now it's funny that everyone has capabilities at home to do it. And mm-hmm. You don't have to go into a studio.
Yep.
Now it's everybody's doing. So it's a lot harder to get into it or get gigs because everybody has a voice. Because like if you know on camera you have to have a certain look, obviously, but you can be whatever you want as a voiceover performer. And also ADR, like looping, it's called looping is ADR. Like when you see a movie and there's a scene in the background where people are eating dinner, so you have people. Oh, so what are you thinking there? Oh, yes, oh, really? So there literally is a microphone, and people will be like, so. What do you think we should order? Yeah, that's a good idea. And they use that as an under track for the regular dialogue. Because remember, no one else is speaking in the scene when it's just two people in a restaurant because you have to hear the two people speaking. So they add another layer of the ambient sound around them. So it's called looping.
Okay.
A lot of times when you're changing it from If it's swearing, they want to change it to, you know, it's up for a plane and something the other. So we're doing movies instead of saying, motherfucker, what the fuck? You're like, motherfucker, mother father, what the fudge? You know, that kind of stuff. So looping, it's its own. And there's people that I know, friends of mine, that just do looping for a living and make residuals on the movies. They make residuals. Wow. And they're called loop groups. And I've done I did one of the X-Men movies. I did five Martin Lawrence films because he didn't want to do his looping. So I would do it. I did Black Knight. I did Open Season, which is a cartoon, Big Mama's House. Yeah. So I've done different actors there. I did one for Cedric the Entertainer and went, yeah. So if you can mimic, I'm a good mimic at voices too, you know, trying to make them sound like, so that you audition that way too. You audition to try to sound like them. They'll give you certain lines you have to say and to fit it in. So a lot of times you'll hear, if you're paying attention to a movie, sometimes you'll hear, that doesn't really sound like them, but no one's really paying attention to it because they can mix it so well. But yeah, so looping is a whole big thing. There's so many weird, different, like Foley artists that, you know, the people who are like, you know, walking, you know, like, you know, make it sound like they're walking or something. That's a whole, you know, that's what people do for a living. It's incredible. Wow. The film and TV industry. So as I said, I have a lot of friends who are just loopers and that's all they do for TV and film. That's all they do. So it's like you're looping for ER. You have to know medical jargon. Stat, we need so-and-so, you know, can you give me a suture that so-and-so? Yeah, okay, put that in there. So you hear it in the background, but it's so subtle that you don't really pay attention to it. So that's a whole.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's stuff you don't think about. And it's just, it makes those like movies and television shows without that background noise. It's just two people talking in a quiet room. It's weird.
Exactly. Yeah. And it can be really tricky too, of getting the voices. And I did Rosewood, which is another movie I did. So. Yeah, so that was I've done some voiceovers for that. So, you know, I try to do it as much as possible, you know, wherever I can be creative and get out there and do stuff.
Yeah, I've had people and all, they have been saying like the voice acting work has been picking up. There has been a lot more animated stuff, especially in a pandemic world. It's so much easier just having people record and one and done. You don't have to go back for multiple takes. You don't have to like present yourself at all. Yeah, no, that's awesome that you're able to do it.
Do it right in your closet at home and audition and record it right in your closet at home too.
Yeah.
And as the business has evolved through COVID, it's really interesting. So now I do all my auditions from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do all my, I have some Zoom callbacks sometimes and I have a whole setup now with a camera and a tripod and lights and a back screen where I used to go in to audition for stuff. Now everything is done here. So it's like the Chris Williams dude school of acting now. And I have friends of mine that I do it for them as well. Okay. At my house. Yeah.
Is that weird for you at this point or is it just business?
There's good things and bad things about it. The good things about it are you have total control over, you can do it as many times as you want.
Oh, yeah.
And you have total control over how you look, how it feels, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm also good at adjustments. And a lot of people can't get hired off of adjustments and not just what they did because the director wants to be able to see, well, that was good, but can you do it this way? Can you do it angrier? Can you do more hurt? Can you do it lighter? Can you do it with more intensity? And when you're in the room with people and you're doing your stuff and they can see if you can make that adjustment on the fly, because if you're acting in a film, and then like, okay, well, I need from this scene, I need you to be more like this. And can you do that? And if you have someone who just does the same thing the same way every time, it's going to frustrate it. They can't do it. That's the one drawback. So I give them a couple takes, hopefully, but, you know, but you never know. And also the genre or the type of TV show, a single cam TV show comedy like Modern Family is very different from a multicam like The Big Bang Theory. There's different types of acting for that. You know, Big Bang is a sitcom, is from here up. It's you're kind of more animated and you kind of be like, what the, you know, like this. But a single cam is much more film, like Curb is more film-like, where it's much more natural and you're not on a set. And multicam is also usually was in front of a studio audience. So you have the energy. So it's kind of like doing a play and there's adrenaline and I miss being on a sitcom like that. I was on a show called Great Indoors. We ran for a year on CBS. Mm-hmm. Feeling the crowd and hearing them laugh, and it's a different thing.
I mean, I guess that's kind of like the comedy at all with stand up.
Yeah, stand up and acting together. It's cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But like even for Curb, I had no gauge of how I'm doing. Like, are you buying the fact that I am a gangster rapper? Am I hard enough? Because you're like, Chris is not hard. But I'm like, well, fuck, am I doing it? And there's one scene in Curb. It was funny. And one scene in Curb where I come to get the jacket back. Mm-hmm. And I go, give me the motherfucking jacket back. And he goes to get the jacket. And I look at her and she's going, she's drunk. And she goes, you didn't love her because you cheated on her. You didn't love that. And I turn around and go, shut the fuck up, bitch. Which is what as a gangster rapper, they're like, okay, cut. Chris, not as harsh, you know. Let's kind of. I was like, I'm being too hard now, you know. I'm like, let's just, you know, take it down a little notch. So there's different levels, and there's so many different types. They say that stage acting is your whole body because you have to have the person in the back see that if you're surprised, you have to be surprised. TV is from here up; you can see from here up, and film acting is just the eye, because if you're 70, if it's 70 feet and you need to be surprised, you can literally go with your eyes like that and it'll be boom. You can't act the same way. There's a different ways of acting in different genres. And I remember when I first started out, I was a stage actor. So when I was doing sitcoms, I was like, oh my God, what are you talking about? Like, yo, comic, like pull it back. Like, comic. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. You know? And so you have to learn as you go along to adapt what kind of energy and mood. And as I said, there's different types of genres within, like, different tones of like Modern Family could be sillier, or something could be really wacky. Mm-hmm. You know, like Bluth, Jason Bateman.
Oh, Arrested Development.
Arrested Development. That's wacky as fuck. You know, grounded in reality, but wacky. Which is different from doing something that's a little, you know, a different tone or a dramedy, which are, you know, like my sister's on Ugly Betty and doing a dramedy, which is comedy, but a little dramatic and not as, you know, wacky thing. So you really have to learn how to adjust what you're auditioning for. And sometimes you're reading on the page and you don't know what it's going to be. Now I'm on a show called Upload right now on Amazon Prime.
I watched that. That was good.
Oh, thanks, man. And we watched the first season, and I play the father to the main character, and all my scenes are dramatic scenes. They were all like, the pilot was all like me. I'm dying of vape lung, and I'm telling my daughter that I want to, you know, I don't want to, because uploading is you can upload your whole avatar and stay alive for the rest of your life, but you'll be in the computer type of thing. But I lost my wife and my wife is dead and I want to go to heaven with her because I'm a religious person. So my whole thing with Upload was a drama. Like, it's dramatic to me, but Upload is a comedy. And when it came, I was like, what do you mean? Because I read the script, but I'm kind of trying to read it. It's a non sequitur because all my scenes, I have to be, there's not wackiness at all. I got to be really dramatic. So when I first read it, I was like, this is a comedy. This is not very funny because I'm not laughing at any of the shit that I'm doing. It's like, really? It's a comedy? And then you see things in the episode, especially the pilot episode, that I'm like, oh, wow, that is so different than what I'm doing. But it kind of works. It's kind of a mishmash of all kinds of different, you know, slapstick stuff and serious stuff and dramatic stuff and like dark shit. There's some dark shit in Upload too. Like being crushed by, you know, it people's heads exploding. And so going back to what I was saying about the auditioning process is you never kind of know, you know, what the tone is or what's, you know, what's really happening with it. Or am I supposed to be bigger or smaller or goofier? Or so not having that immediate feedback. Oh, try, no. Good take on it, but try it this way. Oh, I can do that. You know?
Do you get any feedback at all for auditions when you send them out, whether you get them or not? Or
perfect example, the thing I just auditioned for, the First Lady. I did him as I studied him with this Walter White guy, and he talked like, you know, he was from the 40s, so he had a voice like this. And good to see you, Mrs. Roosevelt. And like I listened to his voice talking like this. And he's a little bit animated, and I'm thank you so much for this. And we submitted it. They came back and they said, more grounded in reality, like more grounded, not so much the character of that, but more grounded. So I did it again, and I just submitted it last night, of taking him down a little, a notch, or making it more, not necessarily authentic. Like, for instance, they said, and let him say NAACP. And I said, but the character, Walter F. White, always said NAACP. He never said NAA. That's like a you know, so if I get the job, I'm going to have a, I'll have to have talk about that on set. But, but I mean, that's the type of thing that if I said NAACP and I submitted it and they're like, no, we want you to say NAACP. I wouldn't have known that unless they had told me that back.
Yeah, how would you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just submitted it again. And we'll see, you know, it shoots in a couple of weeks. So, you know, you never know. So we'll see. So cross your fingers. But yeah,
definitely.
I miss having that immediate feedback. So when I put it on for an audition, you don't hear shit.
Yeah, that sucks.
So you could have been this close or way off.
Yeah.
Or you don't know why you didn't get it. And I've been up for so many between me and somebody else, between I think one job I got because he was taller, because his co-star, the woman he was doing, Gina Torres. You know Gina Torres?
Oh, okay.
She's like 5'10". So it was down to me and this other guy. He's 6'1", and I'm 5'10". And most likely they wanted someone probably who would look like her husband. Even if my acting was better, they can find someone else to do it. So you never know why you get a part or why you don't get a part. Maybe you remind the director of his ex-boyfriend or a friend of his that you know, something about you speaks to that. And like when I auditioned for Upload, the character was the father of a 20-something year old. I'm 53. Yes. I could have a 6-year-old daughter. And the character was supposed to be in his 60s. And I'm like, why am I going out for something? Like I'm, you know, in his 60s. So I put makeup under my eyes to make, cause I'm dying of vape lung. And I put makeup on and I put some white to make me look older. And I did it. And there's other guys who were in the room auditioning. This was still when we were auditioning that were in their 60s, black guys in their 60s. I'm like, what the fuck? So when I did it, I just went for it and did it. And I got it all out. And they're like, oh, you got Upload. And I was like, I did? Like, how the fuck did I get? Oh, that's weird. Like, I never thought that I would. Am I sick? Am I look 60 now? Like, so then when I get up on set, I'm like, I have a beard. And I'm like trying to make me look older. And I'm like, no, we want you clean shaven. And I'm like, but my daughter's 20. Do I look like I have a 20? So you can't tell a lot of times if you're right. And some things that I was like, I am right for this character. And I auditioned for something a couple months ago that I was like, oh, this is my role. Not many people can do this role of being nerdy as well as attractive, like an attractive nerd that could do certain things. That's funny, but like on the, and I was like, this is my role. And then the producer's like, I submitted my tape. They had Zoom meetings with other auditions, other actors. I'm like, why am I not getting on Zoom? They said, he's just not the guy. I'm like, but I am the guy. I'm like, I can't understand why I'm not the guy. He's like, we just don't think. I was like, okay, well, so you never know, you know, backwards and forwards sometimes. Whether
you mentioned like you submit like multiple audition tapes, like with different styles, like how different are your styles that you're recording?
Well, I submit them to my manager and my agent.
Oh, okay.
And I let them decide.
They pick
what they're, and sometimes they'll send in two, if it's one scene. So she sent in both scenes of mine, like the one where it was, you know, he's talking like this, you know, that kind of 40s. And then the one I just did, which was less than that. So they sent both of them in to see that I can do it if I need to.
Okay.
And then you don't know. Unless you get the job, you have no idea why you didn't get the job. No one says, oh, he was great, but, and I tested for so many different things in the last year. He was great, but we went this way, or he needed to be the father. You know, the daughter is darker, or the main lead is this, you know, color, and I'm light, or, you know, it all depends on it's a crapshoot a lot of times. It's a, you know,
that's gotta be tough. Like, to not know how you should improve or how, like, where to go. Are there, Are there people in the industry that help you with that? Like help like kind of direct you to where to like what you should be doing better? Or?
No, I mean, because every project is different. Basically, right. Every project is different. And
especially like everything, it can be arbitrary as well. Like you said, like you just might remind them of a certain person and you're out.
You have no idea what. So it gives you a sense of like, and also, as I said, I'm a product, you know, I'm marketing myself. I'm, you know, what you see of me is what I'm putting out there, but I can't take it personally because it may not just be, they just want someone taller or maybe not as good looking as the main lead or someone shorter than the main lead, or you never know. You never know. So, or relationships that they have with someone else. So you don't know how, like I auditioned for this thing that's coming out soon on Apple Plus, I think it's called Moonhaven. And it takes place in the future and everyone's colonized the moon and it's in 2050. So everyone is pretty homogeneous now because all the races have mixed. So you would think, and it says, you would think mixed race, you know, people would be. And so I read, and Dominic Monaghan, the guy who's in Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
He played one of the, he's one of the main guys. And I was playing his partner. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm a black guy with blue eyes. I mean, come on. And Kadeem Hardison got it. You know, Kadeem Hardison from a different world. Brown skin, brown. I was like, what the hell? Like, that's supposed to be my thing. But you never know. Relationships, you have no idea. So you just have to just do your best and swing for the fences. And the thing about the acting part about it is, and you never know, even if you get on something like Curb was, I could never get on Curb right now because they would stunt cast it with a celebrity now because it's so popular. Mm-hmm. I got in right in the sweet spot where I was an unknown actor or, you know, semi-unknown. I was in a big movie, but no one really knows who I was. And I don't remember, Curb is only three scenes in the whole episode, but that has gotten me more work than anything else I've ever done. I'm doing cameos.
Okay.
And memo is the other MEMMO.
Oh, so people want you to be like crazy eyes for them?
to swear at their, I get one or two requests a week, you know, and I'm like, and I have a whole outfit and I go as crazy eyes and it takes me 5 minutes. People lose their fucking minds that crazy eyes is talking to them. They fucking love it. And they'll put, awesome. I charge like $160. And I'm like, is that too much? And they're like, oh my God, that's fuck. $250 to swear at the, oh, tell my father he's a fucking asshole. Tell his motherfucker he's a fucking asshole. And I'm like, okay. And I try to make it as personal as possible because to get your money's worth. Cause I'm like, okay, if you want me to do that, but people love it. So that show has gotten me, and as I said, three scenes has gotten me so much that it's, you never know. And then I did a TV series like The Great Indoors. We ran for a entire season right after The Big Bang Theory. Our numbers were pretty good. We were just getting our footing. And I'm like, oh, CBS always brings their shows back. I'm like, they had, you know, all these shows that are like, oh, that's so still on, like Mom or, you know, these weird sitcoms. We have a really, nope, they didn't bring us back because the president got a heart attack and then a new regime came in.
Yeah, they cancel everything.
Oh, fuck.
You don't have any control. You have the only control that I have is my work that I'm doing. And even that, I don't have any control how people are going to see it or what they need from it. So it's crapshoot. And that's what you have to learn in the industry. I coach now as well. I coach I have a friend of mine who was a dramatic actress, and now she'd never done a sitcom. So we worked on, I taught her how to do sitcoms and I coached her. She auditioned for it, tested for it, and now it's coming out in October. So I helped her. It's called Pretty Smart on Netflix.
Awesome.
Her name's Sin Carmona. So you never know how things are going to work out for it, you know?
Yeah, we had an actor friend not too long ago who was on for us, and he was telling us like when he does get like parts for a movie, he'll go and look up like who they cast instead of him. And like, he's like, oh, okay, it's funny. Like you do it as well. So I'm sure across the industry, it has to be a very similar thing. Cause everyone wonders, it's like, why'd you choose him over me?
Exactly. Which can drive you crazy.
And like a lot of times you'll be like, oh, this guy's completely different than me. Like obviously like they're not like, I'm completely different.
you never know. You never know.
It'd be weird if they look the same. Yeah.
Right. Like, people audition for dodgeball, and the reason why I got dodgeball is because I was auditioning with the every time. So if I had auditioned for dodgeball now or something, I may not have gotten the role. So you never know. You never know how things work out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So you just got to do as many auditions as you can then.
If you can get the auditions too.
Oh, yeah.
That's another thing, is getting the audition, getting in for the audition, like, I'm right for this. Well, we don't want to see him. Maybe he's not big enough. Maybe he's not a star enough to be a lead. Or the great indoors, I did a show called One Big Happy. It was on for 6 episodes on NBC. And one of the writers on One Big Happy looked up and was like, who is that? He's funny. And had his own series, own pilot on CBS, which directed by James Burrows, who's like the greatest sitcom director of all time. He did Cheers, Frasier, created every Mary Tyler Moore, like everything. And he directed it. And he was like, the writer was like, hey, man, you mind coming on and doing this cameo as a limo driver? Like, just a guest star to come and do for the pilot. And I was like, oh, yeah. I came on. And there's only two scenes, and I killed it, right? I got a standing ovation. Like, when Kramer walks in the door, the second time you see me, they're like, oh, studio audience. I'm like, oh, wow. So from that, the pilot didn't get picked up because it was a great pilot. There were no stars in it. Because it was really good, and there was a comedian. He's a comedian from Canada, and this other woman, and they're really good. But they picked up something called Angel for something with a name on it, and it didn't last 4 episodes. And from that, since I did so well on that, he wrote another pilot for CBS and wrote me as the character. He said, a Chris Williams type.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So I didn't have to audition, even though I was like, what's a Chris Williams type? I was like, fuck, do I know how to play a Chris Williams type? and I ended up, CBS met with me, and so I got to be on that. So you never know. You never know. Things are crazy. And the power of no too, which is interesting, because Californication, did you watch Californication at all?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know Runkle, right? Mm-hmm. I was gonna test for Runkle.
Really?
So I was auditioning for a show called The Wedding Bells. Okay. Right before Christmas. I went in, read for the producers, they had to sing, was playing a wedding singer. So I sang, I did the audition, it was great. And then I auditioned for Runkle, and they were going to test me. So it was me and I don't know, I guess, you know, so I was going to test it with him and maybe one other person. And I went to Brazil for Christmas. So I'm in Brazil for New Year's and chilling on the beach. My manager calls me. She's like, hey, they want you to come back early and test for the wedding bell. And I'm like, well, I'm going to test for Californication. No, I'm good. Just tell them. Oh, they call me back. They really want you to come back early and test. I'm like, I'm in Brazil. I'm not going anywhere. I got this other thing that I can do. It's going to be a good show. And I land in New York. This is not before cell phones, but the cell phones or whatever. I land in New York and my manager goes, you start work on Monday on Wedding Bells. Because I said no. And so I had to give up the Californication test because they gave me a job and we shot, you know, six or seven episodes.
Huh. So you saying no made them want you even more for that.
Maybe that was it. All I know is I was not coming back from Brazil to stop my vacation. So maybe it was no.
This guy must be important. Yeah.
Does that happen often where you have to kind of like choose one show or the other?
That happened with that. I did for Dodgeball, I was on 24. On a 24. Okay.
It's not The Shield, right?
The Shield.
Okay, yeah.
I was I became a recurring on The Shield, an FBI agent that came on The Shield, and I had multiple episodes that I was going to be doing, and then I got Dodgeball, and they're like, you can't do... So I did one episode of it, and that was the only episode I got to do for The Shield. So I had to say no to that, and I did Dodgeball. So sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. You never know.
Yeah, that's crazy. One of the things I had on my list, tell me about the Taekwondo. So you're a black belt?
I'm a 4th-degree black belt in Taekwondo. I moved my house 17 years ago here, and I've always wanted to do martial arts. And there's a martial arts studio literally, you know, half a mile from my house. And I'm like, you have no excuse but to be able to do it. So I went up to the studio, and they're like, oh, well, we can get your black belt for you in like 3 years.
Okay.
If you study in this, that, and the other. So I was up there like 3 times a week and studying, doing my forms and the other. and I got it early. And then ever since then, you know, I've just, you know, you do it for 17 years, you eat more and more and more and more. And I started when I was 38, I think. I was like, you know, I wish I'd started earlier, because now I'm like, oh, you can't stretch, you know. And we've been out for COVID. So I haven't been able to practice my Taekwondo for like a year. And they're just opening up the studio again. So I'm hoping the next couple of weeks I can go back. It's such a great discipline also. And it's interesting because with acting and stuff, the frustrating part of it is that my resume doesn't really mean anything anymore. If you're a lawyer and you've been a lawyer for 30 years, you do marriage law, you say, oh, I want this guy because he's been doing it for 30 years. I can go up for a role against someone who's never not done a lot or whatever, but I have this whole list of things that I do, and he can get the role not based on the things that I've done before. So I may be able to get in the room sometimes, but just because I've been in so many, over 100 things of something, if you want to see me play a, what do you want to see me play? A flight, a cop, a detective? What do you need? I can show you a transvestite. I've done it twice. this and the other, I've done this. So it's disheartening when you don't get a chance to, like, I get offered some jobs. Like, I got offered this Hollywood Star Girl job because they knew my work. And it's the same casting director as Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay.
So they're like, oh, he can do this dad role. So that's how I got that. I met with the director. But there's no validity in terms of, you know, I go in there like, oh, we're going to give you a little extra consideration because maybe you've done more work. But with Taekwondo, I'm looping it back into what I was talking. With Taekwondo, since I've gotten a fourth degree black belt, now I automatically get respect from my, you know, they have to bow to me, the kids or whatever. I automatically, because I've earned that shit. You know, I've earned that shit for 15, 16 years, and you better fucking bow to me as a master. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that as well, my edification of my ego.
Taekwondo stuff helped you with like getting action roles in any films or TV shows?
In Californication, if you watch, remember when I confront him about fucking my wife,
mm-hmm.
and he slams against the wall and I punch him in the nuts. You know, that was yeah, I get to do that kind of stuff. So it's nice to be able to do, you know, stunt stuff if I need to. What's fun?
Okay, that's awesome.
Do you do any sparring as part of Taekwondo training?
Yeah, we sparring with each other. Yeah, that's cool. Exhausting, dude. And I also box too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw box too, which is, you know, 3 minutes of boxing with someone trying to hit you.
Absolutely. Holy shit.
It is fucking exhausting. And you're like, kind of catch your breath and not get hit and hitting somebody. Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. It's good stuff, though.
Talking about the magician, you're a member of the Academy of Magic Arts.
Yeah, there's a place out here called the Magic Castle, mm-hmm. which is like one of the only places in the world where it's place dedicated to magic. There's a restaurant, there's 5 bars, there's all different types of close-up magic and stuff like that. And for my 40th birthday, I got classes. I did some magic when growing up and stuff, but I got classes at the castle because you can learn how to be a magician. I was like, oh my God, I'm in school again. Like, teach me how to do some crazy shit. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. In order to be a member of the Magic Castle, you have to audition and show them that you've learned some things from that. You're not just doing gimmick stuff.
You ever change somebody's 20 into a 1?
I always tell them, if you give me $100, I can make it disappear. You'll never see it.
That's awesome.
So yeah, the magic is fun. I've got to meet some really good people through magic as well.
So we usually ask our guests one last question before they leave us. Any words of wisdom for someone wanting to get into acting or comedy? Something you wish you would have got when you were younger, just starting out?
I would say make sure that this is something that you really, really want to do, because it'll hurt your ego a lot, and you've got to be resilient, and you can't be in it for the fame, and you can't be in it for, like, for instance, Sharon Stone didn't make her health insurance by $13 this year. So you have to make a certain amount for your health insurance, and Sharon Stone did it. So you never know, you know, you've got to be in it and study as much as you can, different types, and learn things. And you never, like, I use magic in a couple of different shows that I've been, they incorporated my magic into my characters or this, that, and the other. So study, go to school. I mean, things that I've learned with my degree from Georgetown, have really helped me in roles that I would not have normally had. But don't be in it for the fame and don't be in it for the money. Be in it for, because this is something that you really want to do and you think you're good at. And don't give up and count on yourself. Like I said, I bet on myself. I was like, you know what? I think I can do that. And as long as I can see forward progress, I've done 4 marathons as well. If I said, can you run 26.2 miles? I'd be like, fuck you. I am not running 26. Are you fucking kidding me? But if I say, can you run from here to there? Yeah, okay, I can run from there. Let's just run for like 10 minutes. You can run for like 10 minutes, can't you? Okay, let's run for 20 minutes. Oh, by the way, you just ran a mile. Oh, really? Can you run from there to there? Small steps. Next thing you know, you're at 12 miles. You're like, well, I can't go back now. I might as well keep on running. Small steps, one thing at a time. Don't look up at the top of the mountain, because if you look at it, you'll never get there. Just concentrate on your feet underneath you and take one step at a time.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That's really good advice. Yeah,
thanks, Chris.
Chris, it's been an absolute blast having you hang out with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too.
Where can our listeners find more of you? Are you active on social media? Do you have a website?
I'm on Instagram at Chris.Williams_. I'm on Twitter, Chris Williams_. And I have, as I said, Hollywood Star Girls coming out. The second season of Upload will be coming out probably in the fall, maybe. And hopefully cross your fingers for this, what I just auditioned for.
Yeah, we definitely hope you get that. It sounds like a good role.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see. Yeah, and and whoever is in the role that gets it, we're all going to go, that motherfucker, that's why he got that shit. Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
Exactly.
Chris's role. Fuck that
guy. Exactly.
Yeah, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on tonight, man. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much.
Josh, Seamus, I really appreciate it, guys.
Definitely.
Have a good night.
Hey, you too, Chris. Thanks.
That's the reason we get into podcasting, guys.
Yeah, man, that was cool. It was good.
I would talk to him for another hour. Like,
absolutely, man. Yeah. He definitely carried it. Yeah, that was nice. That was cool.
I like that he was doing some of his characters, like the way he was doing the crazy eye bit. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, yeah, he's cool as fuck. Yeah, I'm so excited this happened.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for the opportunity, Chris.
Yeah. But he's a really interesting guy at all. Like, even like the magic was so random. I read that. I'm like, really?
It's cool that he's always looking for new experiences and like and able to integrate that into his craft.
Yeah.
I like that he has a music background too. It's like that's
yeah. I think he's like all over the place.
Yeah. Well, music, I think music's really important for a really good foundation for any success in life. So
yeah, especially creative endeavors. But even like performing, like, I mean, it was like his family. Even before we did the podcast, I had a feeling it was going to be like kind of like a family thing where they kind of got him into performing. And it's awesome that it worked out that way. It's funny they want him to be a lawyer.
Yeah, it's like, don't do this. Don't do this, son.
He's a 4th-degree black belt. Let's get my ass beat by crazy guys.
Yeah, I walked in. They had me bow down to crazy eyes. Then he kicked my ass.
Like, motherfucker,
he taught me a lesson, though. He told me he was teaching me a lesson. It felt like he kicked my ass.
Yeah, good times.
Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
What's the bald-headed guy? Oh my God, Michael, what's his name, with the bald head and Walter Goggins and
CSI?
Not CSI. Walter Goggins, the bald head. He was a crooked cop. The Michael so-and-so, he's a crooked cop.
The Shield?